Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Dimension Fold. Tonight we have with us a special guest, Barry Eaton. He's the author of several books, at least three that I'm aware of. We're going to talk to him about some of what he's discovered talk to him about his books and who knows what other interesting stuff we might get into as well. So welcome, Barry.
Well, thanks, Sid. Nice to be with you.
Yeah,
from Australia across to California. How about that?
Yes. I'm actually in Canada.
Oh, you're in Canada?
Yes. Either way, it's even farther.
Oh, right. Whereabouts in Canada are you?
Prince George, BC, so it's north of Vancouver.
I know it well. I used to work with Tourism Canada for a while there. Yeah.
Excellent.
I used to do all their publicity and media here in Australia.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So well, you sent lots of guests our way then.
I brought lots of travel writers with me, sent lots of guests, and I've been to Canada many, many times. My last time was only 2019. Love it.
Oh, yeah, right on. Cool. I have yet to make it to Australia, but someday I will.
I'm sure you will. You're welcome.
Yeah. It's an interesting topic that you have chosen to write about. And I guess, first of all, maybe I want to ask you two questions. Firstly, how would you describe the topic of these books? And then how did you get interested in that topic?
Right. Well, how did I get into it? The topic is basically the same as my radio program, Radio Out There. And it's spiritual, it's metaphysics, paranormal, whatever label you want to put on there. And it started for me, as with a lot of people, a change of life brought about by divorce. And you're thinking at the time, oh, where do I go now? I'm not happy with life. So it all opened up. I was doing a radio program on commercial radio at the time, and I had a psychic, and she forecast on air live that I would soon be working in a spiritual area. And I said, oh, you're kidding me. I'm doing radio. I'm doing a bit of television. I have my own media relations and production company. When am I going to find time? She just looked at me and smiled. And she was right. Within a short time, things had fallen apart. And I was directed intuitively to study astrology. And that's what I did. That's where I started. And that was over 30 years ago. So I studied that. It all opened up. And I've combined all my communication areas with areas. I went from astrology to clairvoyance to mediumship to past lives, all of them. They just opened up. And I realized that that was my path in life. That was my real mission here. In fact, I've just finished writing my memoirs, and I'm talking about that as the essence of why I'm here. And I think we all need to think about that, Ken, wherever possible, that we're not just here to take up space and use as much oxygen as possible. We all have a purpose, but finding that purpose, even wanting to find it, let alone look for it, is beyond a lot of people, which is rather sad. Yeah. But anyway, so I took it all up and I combined my broadcasting and various other things with new spiritual areas, and that is how it's happened. And part of that evolved into something I'd always wanted to do, and that was write a book. So I've ended up writing five now, with new one about to head in the direction of a publisher, I hope.
Excellent. Did you find that as you started writing about, most of the books that I've seen of yours are typically focusing on the afterlife and past lives. To me, those are two things that are similar, but maybe mutually exclusive in some ways. Did you find that your thoughts around these phenomenon or these ideas or concepts, did your thoughts change through the course of writing these several books on it?
Oh, very much so. I mean, I was directed into writing about the afterlife. It's quite a long story, but I had not set out to do that, but it all happened, and I believe I was sort of pushed gently from the other side, and sometimes not even so gently, and pushed in that direction. So I wrote one book on the afterlife, and in that sort of ended up expanding into a trilogy, which started off with two books on the afterlife, and then what I consider is the natural evolvement, or evolution, I should say, of the afterlife into reincarnation. Because in the afterlife, we are there not just to sit on a cloud and thrum away on a harp or something like that. I mean, that's all nonsense. We're there as part of our life journey, and that can go on for thousands of years. We're all at different stages, but we all are destined to lead more than one life, mostly hundreds. So it all flows. So the past lives was the third book in the trilogy, and I believe that was a natural evolution.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's still this nagging feeling that I have that, like, there's, I mean, maybe it's just the conservative background that I come from, but like, when, if you say that, if you say afterlife, that sort of brings with it a lot of preconceived ideas, of course. And so there's the ideas of heaven and hell, which seem maybe somewhat at odds with the, especially hell, is a little bit at odds with the idea of reincarnation. And I know that you can rectify those ideas, and many people have, but there's, I guess, how do you feel that there is there a dichotomy there or not?
Well, let me start off by saying there is no such place as hell. Forget it. That was all made up to keep people in control. And, you know, governments and politicians and churches and everybody have tried to keep people in control for thousands of years. So that's it. Do what we tell you, or you'll go to hell and you'll suffer with demons prodding you into flames for the rest of eternity. Yes, sir, I'll do what I'm told.
Right. I mean,
that is rubbish. There is, from all the contact I've had, and I have a lot of contact with the other side, have had for quite some time now, and they all say one thing, forget it. There are many different levels and spheres in the afterlife. And the lower spheres are where we go once we, you know, we kind of expect something like Hitler or Stalin or a few others to end up in a lovely spot with a beautiful home overlooking water and a retinue of people looking after them and all saying, oh, aren't you a nice person? No, they have to face up to what they've done, and there's no judgment, but we'll judge ourselves when we get over there. This is, I'm getting ahead of myself here. But the levels that we go to are part of the evolution of our soul. Because when we arrive here on our first visit, and we are energy, pure energy, and that is what the soul is. Soul is energy with a spirit wrapped around it, and it takes a vehicle, which is the human body. The soul attaches itself at the heart level, the heart and soul, and then we have an experience. Now, when the body has had enough, and the body is right to go, the soul knows that and says, okay, it's like, you know, trading in your old car, and it won't work much longer, it's too old, so, okay, all right, I'll trade it in. So we trade in the body, we go back to where we came from, which is the afterlife, heaven, paradise, the other side. Look, there's lots and lots of labels, but we come from somewhere. And energy, as you know, in the law of physics, says we cannot destroy energy. It can be transmuted, but it can't be destroyed. So our energy, which is what we really are, goes back logically to where it came from in the first place, which is the afterlife. I put it as the afterlife, all right, or the other side. And that is where we reside. But like in our world here, there are many, many different levels. And I mean, if you go and do a lot of work and make a lot of money, you live in a nice house. If you don't, and the conditions of your life are that you live in a much smaller house or not even a house at all with a lot of people these days, then that is part of what you are going through right now. But it's a continuing story, and where we are at any given time in the evolution of our soul is where we are when we go back to the afterlife. So forget hell, no demons, no prodding, no eternal flames, none of all that nonsense, but we go back and we're given another chance to come back here. And that is where reincarnation comes in. We don't just get one chance. That would be crazy, wouldn't it? Think about it. One chance. Look at all the people in the world. Some of them are born with a silver spoon in their mouth. Some of them with a gold spoon in their mouth. Others born into abject poverty. Where's the balance? Where's the sense? Where's the logic? No, but if it's part of everything that we have to experience on our earthly journey and onto other worlds as well, this is only one of many worlds. Only one. And we evolve into various worlds. I go into that a lot in my book, Past Lives. So we're starting to drift off the main area here. But do you get what I'm... Forget hell.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the conclusion I came to as well when I started reading the Bible in Hebrew. And I was like, there's no mention of hell in here at all. So you don't hear about hell in the Bible until... Well, I guess the Apostle Paul is the first guy who starts talking about it. And everything that Paul says is drastically different from everything that came before him.
That's right.
So you really have to wonder what he's talking about and where he got his information. Yes. That's an interesting point, too. And I wasn't planning on talking about the Bible, but since I brought it up, there are a couple stories in there there's certainly some that are tangentially afterlife related, and one that is directly so, there's two characters in the Bible named Lazarus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are dead. One of them comes back to life and just continues his life, and the other one, it's odd that they both have the same name, but the other fellow is also named Lazarus, and he's just a character in a story that Jesus tells, where he describes, look, when he basically says, when you die, you can see people across this vast chasm. And, you know, they might be screaming out, hey, help me, get me out of here. And yet he cannot make it across. Like, do you have any thoughts on that particular story?
It's the first time I've heard that one. But, I don't know. The Bible, I find, and I'm not a biblical person. I've never studied it or whatever. But from some of my own research, I find there's a lot of allegories in the Bible, and it's not all fact. And that was the way it was recorded in those days. And so much of the Bible was written many, many years later, especially the New Testament. So it was telling the story. It would be like somebody trying to write a first-hand account now of the U.S. Civil War in 1864.
Right.
It just can't happen. It's of everything that's been handed down. So, I mean, there's a lot of wonderful information in the Bible. I'm not knocking the Bible, please, don't get me wrong. But I'm saying you can't just take it as, I shouldn't say gospel, but you can't just take it as 100% accurate, like the Encyclopedia Britannica or something like that. So it's very hard to comment on that one, Ken.
Yeah, that's fair. I didn't know what your background was on that.
I'm a spiritual person. I was raised in the Christian church, but I've now moved on to a spiritual area in my life. And I believe that I've graduated, shall we say. So I'm purely spiritual these days.
Right. Have you studied any Buddhism or Taoism or any of those?
Oh, only as research. I've never studied them as such.
Yeah. No. Okay. Okay, well, what? Let's put it this way. I think that you probably have a lot of really interesting stuff. What would you like to talk about?
Whoa, I thought you were doing the interview.
Well, I mean,
I'm used to doing the interviews myself.
Sometimes I do it that way, but I'm not really sure where we're going with this, and so I'm.
All right. Well, why don't we start off with? I have my first book here called Afterlife, and that's the local Australian cover. There's a different one in the States. But that all happened. I didn't set out to write a book about the afterlife. It happened because my partner, Julie, whom I met a few years after that divorce I told you about before, and it was forecast. I always started to do some automatic writing before that, and it came through, and I started to connect with the other side. And I was told, there's a very special person coming into your life, et cetera, et cetera. Judy came into my life in 1993. We were together for 4 years. She sadly passed at that time, and she was only in her very, very early 50s. And we got in contact on the other side. I was doing a radio program at the time, and Judy was helping me. And one of my guests was a medium, and her name was Ruth. And Ruth came on the program, talked about various things. She met Judy a few weeks before Judy passed over. So shortly after Judy passed, about 3 months later, Ruth rang me and said, by the way, would you like to be in touch with Judy? I said, well, yeah, of course I would. But it's only 3 months. I thought, you know, it normally takes a bit longer. So she said, no, all been cleared by the other side and we can go ahead. So she said, come up to my place on Friday and we'll take the session from there. So I did, and I thought, well, this is interesting. So I arrived up at Ruth's place at what I thought was the right time, only to find Ruth standing on the doorstep, almost tapping her foot with impatience. Where have you been? Where have you been? I said, well, I'm sorry. She said, half an hour late. I said, oh, I must have missed some time. So I said, I'm terribly sorry. I'm still a bit all over the place after Judy's passing. So she said, oh, come inside. She said, there's a room full of people in there waiting for you. I said, what? A room full of people? I came here to be in contact with Judy. What if you were invited an audience or something? So I went in there and I looked around the door and I couldn't see a soul. But it turned out the room was full of souls. They were everywhere, family, friends, and of course, Judy. By now, it was almost Christmas, and this was Judy's way of wishing me a happy Christmas. We connected and through Ruth, and I was told that we had been given permission from the other side to stay in contact, and they would help us, and they told us how to do it. Well, that went on, and that gained in strength over the next year or two. And during this time, I then went from automatic writing to be able to tune in through my thoughts and became the early stages of my mediumship abilities. It opened naturally, really did. So I know I was getting a lot of help from the other side. So after a while, Judy kept on saying to me, with all your experiences, you should write a book. In fact, we have sent you a book. We've made sure that you write a book, and there's a wonderful book on its way to you from Dr. Michael Newton called Journey of Souls. I thought, oh, okay, fair enough. I forgot all about that. Anyway, I was so busy doing other things at the time. I'd moved house and was trying to get on with my life. But at this stage, I forgot. I only found this with notes later on that she had told me at the time that I was going to write a book in this vein. So after a while, she kept on nagging me. Come on, Barry, you have to write the book. Come on, write the book. So I started to work with on my radio program with a wonderful Canadian medium, by the way. And he was a brilliant medium. And he one day, as we were about to go to air, he said to me, oh, Barry, he said, do you know a Judy? And I said, yes, I know Judy. She said, on the other side. I said, yeah. Why? He said, Well, because she keeps on coming through to me with the same message. Tell Barry, when is he going to write that book? I thought, oh, my God, I've been nagged from spirit now. So I started to write that book. So I wrote a book. And I at the time, I'd also written done an interview with Wayne Dyer. Remember Wayne Dyer? Conversation with God, right. And whatever. Right. Anyway. So I said to him, how difficult is it to communicate with God? He said, well, I do it all the time. He said, why don't you give it a try? So I did. And I found myself, I was in connection. I'm not saying it was God, but I know it was somebody quite, shall we say, a divine presence, whether it was angelic or what, I don't know. But I kept on getting all this wonderful support from the other side. So I was encouraged to write the book. So I thought, all right, well, I'll write a book. And having done the radio program by this stage for several years, I started to write about various topics, everything from universal mysteries right through to the afterlife, life after death, and past lives, everything in between. And I got a lot of downloaded insights as well. So I put all that together and took it to a friend of mine who was she was actually the book editor on my radio program, but she'd gone back into publishing at the time to a wonderful independent publisher. He's called Alan M. Unwin, the top independent publisher in Australia. She was there. So she said, all right, I'll read the book. So she gave me some advice. I did some edits, did another draft, sent it back to her. And she said, I have to give it to the publishers now, all of them at Alan Unwin. As a first-time author, every publisher has to agree so it'll be published. Hmm. So I thought, okay, all right, well, I'll wait. So she contacted me a few weeks later and said, can we have lunch? I said, oh, right, it's good, this must be going to happen. So we went to lunch, and she walked in with a bit of a smiling face. She said, well, first of all, I have to tell you that the book you sent doesn't fit with the way we do things because there are too many different sections to it. It needed more focus. So I thought, oh, God, that's it. But she said, but on the way here, I was contacted by upstairs. And that was the way that she regarded people on the other side. She called them upstairs. So she said, upstairs said, no, that book won't happen, but we want you to tell Barry to write a book about the afterlife. So she said to me, would you like to write a book about the afterlife, life after death? So I thought, nobody says no to a publisher when you haven't published a book before. So I said, would I ever? I'd love to write a book about the afterlife. So I went away, and I connected almost immediately with a wonderful presence on the other side, a guide, if you like, purely to help me. And I was told that I was one of many people selected around the world to help write, talk about, do programs about, whatever, about life after death, the afterlife, because they want to take the fear out of dying. And that's the most important thing. Too much fear. People are afraid of dying. What's going to happen to me? Am I going to go to hell? All that rubbish. So The book evolved, it happened, and I had this wonderful contact. All I know was I was told that the person on the other side wanted me to address them as M, and M was there. Every time I sat down to write, M would come through, and I would sometimes just start typing, and I would end up typing something. I thought, oh, where did that come from? And it was amazing. But M guided me all the way through. I was then also introduced to another group of souls on the other side. That's another long story. But a whole group of them who were in contact, and I was able, through another trans medium, to connect. And they brought this person through, whom I called John, my spoke spirit. He was a spoke spirit for about 100 different spirits on the other side, souls. And they would come through with all sorts of information that they wanted to put across. So it was very well organized on the other side. It wasn't just me making it up. It wasn't me taking other people's work and rewriting it. No, this was all original, came from the other side. So then Afterlife was accepted, it was published, and within a few months, it was a bestseller. So I know that I was helped, guided, and pushed and prodded from the other side. Started off with nagging, it went on to wonderful divine help. And that was how it all started, Ken.
It's fascinating. yeah, so, like, what do you think it's like for these, like, why, I guess, like, when you were explaining that, I'm kind of envisioning these entities, let's just say, these souls, as, like, they, especially how you were talking about a spokesperson, and he's working with this other group of individuals. So it's like, it almost sounds like they're like working for a company that has some kind of agenda that they are trying to get, you know, a project that they want to get done, which is you writing this book. And it's like, okay, that's like, I've never thought of it that way before. That's really interesting, though.
All right, but let's think of it as a company, and why not? Who's the head of the company? Who's the CEO? Well, the big fella.
Yeah.
God, the source, the creator, whatever label you want to put on him, or her, or both. So why not? The company there has all sorts of representatives, middle management. We have angels. We have wonderful evolved souls, ascended masters. So many different areas, so many different levels within. It's like a huge organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it boils down to us here, and they are helping guide us in many ways. They want to help us. They want to be able to take that fear. So, yes, I was one of the people being used, if you like, or motivated or inspired or whatever word you want to use. And as I said before, I'm just one. I'm not putting big notes on myself. I'm not saying, oh, how important am I? No, no. I was selected along with a lot of other people. And you have a look how many books about the afterlife and whatever have been published in the last, I mean, Afterlife came out in 2011. And since then, in the last 13 years, there have been one heck of a lot of books come out, a lot of programs coming on to radio, TV, a lot of information circulating. And I find that a confirmation that, yes, there has been a push from the other side to take the fear out of death.
Right.
And why not? What?
Well, yeah, I mean, fear doesn't do anybody any good.
Yes, it does. It does those who are controlling us good. The people want to put fear in us right now. And there are lots of people on Earth in very key positions who want to control by fear. I'm not going to go into names.
Absolutely.
Here. But I'm sure you know who I mean.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's why I personally avoid huge swaths of, media and society in general. Is just like, I don't have time for that crap. So let's talk about reincarnation a bit, and sort of like, you know, so I guess this is really interesting too, because if you have people who have jobs on the other side and they're working on this project, and then at some point, perhaps they will be sent elsewhere or sent back or however you want to call it. Is it a different group of people? Or is it like you do, is there this cycle? Is there this, maybe this idea that's like the, from Hinduism, where you're trapped in a cycle, but at some point you can break out of the cycle and then maybe you then take on a different, more stable position. Any idea around those kinds of ideas?
Oh, very much. In Afterlife, I wrote about the various levels, and I'll just take some notes here. There was a guy called Frederick Myers who I quoted, and Frederick Myers was the founder of the Society for Psychical Research in Britain. And when he passed over, and it was a long time ago, he came back on several different people around the planet mediums with information. When it was all put together, it told the story. So it wasn't one person saying, this is what Frederick said. No, it was a whole bunch of people and top mediums. So he came back and he said, there are five main levels here. The first level is the plane of illusion, the third level. And that's where most of us go to in our recycling. We go back there because we still need a lot more help, a lot more lives to lead. And that is where we are then working on what mistakes we've made, what we learned from it, and preparing ourselves for the next visit to Earth or maybe to another world. So then we do move up the next sphere. And once you graduate like this, it's like school or university or whatever. You then graduate when you've passed all your tests, worked out and rectified your mistakes, handled your karma, so you don't have any karma, you've treated everything. Then you move up to the next level. The world of idealized form was what Frederick Meyer called it. And this was the fourth level there. And this is where people do not need to come back again onto Earth. They might come back here as a guide. They might come back to be able to help people, but they don't have to reincarnate. They don't have to lead more physical lives. Now, the world of idealized form, we are graduating, growing, learning, evolving even further. So once we then, and it's not as if you sit for exams or whatever. No, no. As you evolve, it's a natural evolution. So then you can find yourself in the next level, according to Frederick Meyer, the plane of flame. And this is where we are basically flames. And we are then existing in, these are all different dimensions, by the way, because the afterlife is another dimension. But these are dimensions outside just the plane of illusion, next dimension, world of idealized form, then the plane of flame, when we are flames. And we can exist on planets like Venus, where people say, well, hang on, you can't live on Venus because it's the temperature, the flames, the heat, the whatever. Well, yeah, you can. It's a body of flame. After that is the plane of light. And this is for very, very evolved souls. And after that, the plane of the spirit realm. And that is where the source, that is where God's domain. Once you're there, you're just reintegrated into the source. Because we all come from the source. We all start off as part of that energy. And we all hive off. And that's where we start our soul's journey. Maybe it was 10,000 years ago. Who knows? Maybe it was on other planets. Everybody's story is unique. But that is basically what happens. And when we're over there, getting back to past lives here, we don't, as I said, go back there and after you finish your life, they say, okay, right, Barry, and coming back, okay, here's your harp, there's your cloud over there, off you go, bye, have a nice time. No, no. First of all, you start to meet with your guide meets you, and then you're going to meet the council of elders. Now, you might meet one, two, three people in the council. You may meet more, depending on your evolution. They then take you back and show you aspects of your life. It's like at the end of a sports event, end of a football game, okay? Coach says, right, okay, guys, we're going to sit down here now and look at the game. Now, this is where we made that mistake. Now, we can't do that next time, and that was really good. Keep that one in the game, but no, no. And that was a terrible mistake. That was dreadful. That has to go. So that's what happens, and we are helped. We are not judged. We are not turned around and sent off into hell.
Right.
As I said, no such place. But the Council of Elders then say, okay, this is what they show you, and they show your effect on other people, and it's up to you. You judge yourself. You then go away and are helped to understand what it is and how next time you're able to work with this. Because you're going to go back again and work with unresolved karma. And that's what we do. And I know I've come back because I think I mentioned before, I've just finished writing my memoirs. And I've been told, and I know that I have dealt with certain people because it was unresolved karma with them from previous lives. So I've been able to resolve that in this lifetime.
Hmm.
So that is how it happens. But when you're there in the afterlife, you're also helped to understand what and prepared for what your next life will be. And because they know what it is. So then when the time comes, when it's the right time, and there's no such thing as time, by the way, that's third dimensional reality. That's our limitations of time. There's no such thing as time in the afterlife. It's another dimension. Right.
So even the concept of the cycling back and through is sort of flawed because that implies a linear timeline.
That's right. I can't cope with it, but there's a lot of thought, speculation, that we are living all our lives simultaneously. I find that sort of does my head in. But whether or not that can happen, I don't know. But outside of the third dimensional reality, then who knows? But we are prepared. And then when it's time, we get a little tap on the spiritual shoulder to say, okay, time to go back here now. You're ready. And this is where we are prepared and helped into our next incarnation. So whether it's here on Earth, whether it's on another planet, because there are many, many, many planets out there in many different universes. This is not the be-all and end-all, no matter what certain people will try and tell you. It's only just one.
Yeah. Okay, so that gave me a couple more questions here. Let's see. I don't want to forget this one, so I'll ask it first. When they've got, so you said that there could be multiple lives happening at the same, I'll say at the same time, even though
I didn't say it could be. I said there is speculation.
I mean, to me, that is an interesting idea because if there are, let's say, 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 or however many, or maybe only 10. Versions of me happening simultaneously. Let me retrace my steps for a second. I sometimes wonder, okay, well, if there were past lives, then would there be any transfer of memory from a previous to the next? Which I think is an interesting question. But now this is a different this model makes that question turn a little bit different because now it's like, is there any communication in real time between the 10 me's? And to me, that seems like plausible because that's when I have dreams, it often seems like that's what's happening. Is that I'm experiencing a different life.
Okay. Well, there's about five different questions all in one there, Ken. What I can do here. My book is called Past Lives Unveiled, and that's it there. And there it is. Ooh, right. Anyway, the unveiled was something I wanted to put in there because when we come back in a lifetime, it's like a veil drops. We cannot come back. Can you imagine what it would be like if you were able to understand, know what was happening in a lifetime that was in ancient Rome or you were a warrior in Sparta or somewhere? I mean, can you imagine all that information coming through to you? You would be in an insane asylum before you even got your kindergarten. So a veil has dropped, but children are able to peep through that veil up until about the time they're seven, and they are able to remember a lot about their past life, a lot about their afterlife situation. It's there, but kids will come through. And I put some of these stories in my book because there was a fellow called Professor Ian Stevenson who did thousands of cases of children and the whole area of past lives, and so many of them. For instance, one in particular springs to mind. These people were driving with their small son in the country. And he said, "That's where I'm buried over there," as they went past the cemetery. And they said, he's only a kid. What do you know? Anyway, they went, and on the way back, he said, "There I am. There it is. I'm buried in there." So they sort of stopped and talked to him about it. He told them, and I said, well, can you show us where you're buried? So I said, yes. So I took them, he told them all about it, told them the name, took them straight to the grave. They, of course, were absolutely gobsmacked. And that is just one of many stories. But after about seven, and I should explain it astrologically, but I won't. After about seven, there's memories, the veil really becomes very thick. So we lose that because there's so many other things. We're at school, we're doing all sorts of things, we're growing up. And parents tend to sort of say, oh, okay, yes, you've got imaginary friends, you've got this. Yeah, of course, you died in the Crimean War. And yeah. They don't listen. They don't accept. They don't question. So there we are. So the veil does drop. But as for communicating with other lives, yes, you can, because it's called past life regression. And I've been regressed several times. I'm also a trained regression person. I take people into regression, not just for a Hollywood time tunnel experience. Oh, no. You're there to find out what it is you need to know in this lifetime that takes you back to that lifetime. And I write about a couple of them in particular in my book, Past Lives Unveiled. And this is what happens. People are getting past life regression sessions all over the world. And I hear back from, I mean, I was first regressed by a wonderful man called Peter Ramster. He was a psychologist. Sorry, I keep getting mixed up. He was a psychologist who then stumbled on past life regression. He then went on to write several books. He did two feature-length TV shows that were released worldwide. When he took this woman in one of them back, he regressed her into a past life, and she lived over in England, in Glastonbury. She knew where, she did all sorts of things, all sorts of information. So he took her and a film crew back, and she took them unerringly to where she had been living in a past life. They dug up a whole floor in what was a yard full of chickens and full of chicken droppings to find the tiles underneath with the markings that she had described in a session in Australia 12 months beforehand. The farmer didn't even know about it.
Huh.
So all of these stories are there, and we can go back and we can communicate. What she got from that lifetime is in Peter's book, In Search of Times Past, and that's unfortunately unavailable these days. But all of these things are there, and that was why I was inspired to write Past Lives Unveiled. And I spoke to so many people who've led unbelievable lives that when they went back into their past, they found out why they were here in this lifetime. And that's very important.
Right. Like, is it a lot of times that there's like something specific that they that they have to fix somehow, like almost like a time travel movie?
Yes, yes. One of them, would you like me to tell you about one of them?
Sure.
A very, very well-known man. Dr. Norm Shearley. Now, Norm Shearley worked with Caroline Mace for many years. You may know Caroline Mace.
I'm not
M-Y-S-S.
Sure.
M-Y-S-S.
Okay.
And anyway, Norm, in this lifetime, was a neurosurgeon. He was the inventor of the TENS machine and other pain management systems. He was a neurosurgeon, and he then on one occasion, went to a talk, and this person started to talk about this character. He said, hang on, that's a doctor in the 19th century called John Elliotson. And he said, hang on, that's me. Here is a leading neurosurgeon. And he felt this icy chill go down his back. He said, I know, that was me. So he was inspired to go over to England and trace John Elliotson. John Elliotson was a doctor who introduced stethoscopes to British medicine and also the use of narcotics in operations. Pain management, John Edison, pain management, Norm Shirley, right? He never heard of this guy beforehand. He also founded the Phrenology Society, that's the brain of the organ of the mind, and he also was into mesmerism, which was an early form of hypnotism. He upset medical authorities, resigned, and then the Royal College of Physicians asked him to give the Harveyan oration, and his subject was, quote, the hypocrisy of science in accepting new thoughts. In this lifetime, Norm, who shared, quote, unquote, a contempt for medical hypocrisy, anonymously published a novel based on the hypocrisy of medicine accepting new ideas. And he unwittingly used material from Elliotson's Harveyan lecture.
Wow.
One thing you cannot accuse him of is plagiarism, because he wrote both of them.
Yeah, that's
Norm is an amazing man. He's now in his early 90s. In fact, I replayed an interview I did with him a few years ago. I replayed it on radio out there just a couple of weeks ago. He is a wonderful, wonderful, an amazing man. And he's helped so many, many people in this lifetime. But he turned from being a neurosurgeon into holistic medicine. Mm. And Norm said to me, he felt that when he worked on all this, he had to come back and finish what he started as John Elliotson and correct a couple of mistakes.
Right.
And he said he did. So that to me is the ultimate story of past lives and the ultimate positivity of coming back here to correct your mistakes.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's really cool.
Mm. I tell the whole story in my book, Past Lives Unveiled.
Okay. So, Past Lives Unveiled. So here's, I'm going to put the book up here on top of my face so people will know what to look for. Okay. And there'll be links below as well. So,
thank you.
Myself, I've heard probably hundreds of stories similar to this where there's like just weird stories about like people who remember something, or you know, they find out something and then they go check it out and it turns out to be accurate. And I'm sure there's thousands of these stories, and you've probably heard hundreds yourself. So let's go back to that that timeline side of it. Like a lot of the stories you hear are essentially retrieving a connection to a past life in the past, so historical points. Are you familiar with any stories where that same effect applied, but the other life was actually occurred in the future somehow?
That's a very complex question. What I did do, and I was taken back by my very good friend Peter Smith, who was the former president of the Michael Newton Institute, by the way. Pete is a wonderful past life regression person, absolutely wonderful. He doesn't do it anymore. He's into quantum consciousness, he says. But anyway, Pete took me back in several regressions, and one of them, I've put them all in my book, by the way, Past Lives Unveiled, but one of them does fall a bit into what you're talking about here now, because he did several sessions, and one of them I ended up leaving the body and going into outer space, as it were, because Pete maintains that over 90% of people that he's regressed over many years, and there's hundreds and hundreds of them, that most, about 90%, recall lives on other worlds. So this one, I connected with another.
Sorry, just to be clear. So are you talking about like other physical planets or other universes or something like that?
Well, we don't know.
Other we can't worlds. Tell for sure, but okay.
No, no, no. There are other worlds there. Some of them are water worlds. Some of them are other planets. Different story. I mean, he gave me one or two instances, and I've quoted them. But of the many that he did, you would have to ask him next question.
Sure.
But anyway, he connected me with another aspect of myself. And this was an aspect in a spaceship. Now, this sounds very much like Star Trek or Star Wars or something. And I was totally down into deep, deep hypnosis at the time. I heard all this back later. I had no idea. And this aspect of myself was somebody called Leda, L-E-D-A. And Leda was out in space in a craft exploring another world as part of a group of souls from their planet exploring other worlds to find out where and how they could move on because their own world was dying. And Leda talked about this world of a city that he looked down on that was almost in total ruins, even though the buildings were there, whatever, no population. And because this is in the future, we're not talking about 2024 or whenever it was I did this, I did it in about 2020. But he was out there in what we regard as the future. And this city had absolutely been devastated. And his feeling was it was all because of technology. And this is what Leda was saying. Technology killed the city because there was no love. And we have to have love. Technology, they were advanced, so advanced, but it destroyed the civilization. And cutting a long story short here, he came back, connected through me, sending a warning out, I believe it's a warning, saying that we need to be very careful about our technical development because we cannot go in every way out searching for incredible technical developments and leave our humanity behind. Now, this is, as I said, that's the short version of it. Now, this I wrote this book back in 2017. So it was long before we started to find out now about AI and things like that. But as soon as we find out about AI, bells started to ring within me, and I looked back at my story about Leda, and I believe it was a warning that he was putting out through me that we have to, and I'm not saying I'm a great bell ringer or prophet or whatever, I'm just saying I was the vehicle, I was the messenger, and that we have to be very, very careful about our technical development so that it doesn't take over. And I think there's so many concerns at the moment. In fact, my book, Afterlife, has been ripped off in America and put a dreadful robotic narration on the book, which has been put out there. And I urge people not to listen to it. It's not me. Neither did my publishers. So they're ripped off. And there's a lot of people being ripped off right now as far as AI is concerned. I believe that can be a very big concern. But I'm only one of, hundreds of millions or billions of people on this planet who might be affected by all of this. So that's where sometimes we can get messages sent to us from the other side via our work in this whole spiritual area.
Yeah. I think that, I've done a lot of writing. I've written some science fiction and lots of other stuff. And I kind of have this sense that when you, like, let's just look at science fiction plots. So, I mean, it's a lot of times it seems like some, that idea has come from somewhere.
Of course. Like,
right? Mm. And from somebody who knows more than we do.
I agree with that. My son is a journalist, and he's published about three or four books on science fiction now. But he has found that he doesn't call it science fiction anymore. He calls it fantasy. But he's written some wonderful books, and he's just about to release another one, actually. His name's Matt Eaton. So he covers that side of the equation, although we did write a couple of film scripts together, but he covers that side of the equation, and I do the more spiritual side.
Yeah. I mean, they're not so far apart, really, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. But I do believe that we have to keep an eye on science, because, I mean, a lot of what we talk about with the afterlife, whatever, all the great science experts rubbish that. Oh, that's absolute nonsense. But science is an evolving source of information.
Yeah.
And it's not contained in a box. So you can't talk about science having all the answers. It doesn't.
Yeah. No. And a real scientist doesn't claim to know the answers.
There's a lot of them too.
Yeah, those aren't. Yeah, well, okay. I mean, lots of people make lots of claims.
Yeah.
But science is a method and a process. And part of that method is trying to disprove what we think we know.
Yeah,
and that's true. Real science, right? Like if that's not part of what you're doing, you're not really doing real science, because that's the scientific method. It's really baked in there. But yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting to, it's easy for people to focus on science as the bad guy sometimes, and it certainly can be dangerous. And you're right. I think we do have to be careful in terms of, what we're focusing on and not forgetting about other important things, whether that be science or economics or politics or religion,
whatever.
All of those things can be equally dangerous.
Very true.
Yeah. So very true. I like your take on, you know, and a lot of people call it spirituality, and I sometimes don't know what that means, but I do, like, you know, it's an interesting idea. Like, and I think that maybe that's part of it, is that maybe it's better not to think you know what it means, because then your spirituality can fall into that rut of the scientist who thinks he knows everything. It's just as bad to be a spiritualist who thinks they know everything.
Oh, very true. I don't know everything. There's no way. Yeah. I know about that much out of the entire universe.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to have that much. But we have to be realistic, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah, well, so that's, I think, maybe that's a good place to leave it. I mean, it's a good takeaway, is that, you know, we all have these grand I don't want to call it an idea. There's something bigger than all of us, right? Mm-hmm. And you can call it God, you can call it science, you can call it spirituality. I don't know, but they're all labels, exactly. And when we try to describe them, we're only describing a model that is inside our mind. Well, the human mind is not infinite. So in order to, well, I mean, maybe it is, but in my experience,
that's the problem.
Yeah.
We don't know what might be left in there that we have not even an idea of how to access.
Well, that's true. So, and that's a whole other interesting thing. But assuming that there's a small part of reality that we have modeled in our mind, that's the part that we understand, it's so small compared to anything else that could be out there. And a model is only a representation of the reality. So whatever you think God is in your mental image of God is nowhere close to what God is actually like, if there is a God.
I was shown an image when I asked, I first connected after I said before with conversations of God, And when I came in today, I asked for some kind of image. And I was shown a giant ocean of energy.
Mm.
And that, I mean, to say that we are born in the image of God, people think, oh, God must look like a human being. That's why Zeus, the figure, you know, the old man with a beard sitting in a chair, chucking thunderbolts around. No, right. That's not the image of God. God is energy. So what are we? This is not me. That's not you. There you are. Yeah, that's not you.
Yeah.
Your energy is who you are. And you are a tiny, 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 tiny droplet of the energy of Source, of the Creator, of God.
Awesome. All right. I think that's a great, great place to end it. Our time is pretty much up here. So thank you again for joining me, Barry. It was wonderful chatting with you. And again, I'm going to put your book up here. So guys, check out, he's got these three books that I'm going to flash here right after each other. Plus a few more. So go do your Google search, check out the Amazon, and definitely support our friend Barry here. And hopefully we'll speak again. Thank you so much, Barry.
Ken, thank you. Love to meet you. All the best. Yeah.